Martin Luther was moved to go into the monastery because of the lightning flash in the sky and thunder and all that.
You were not there, right?
Came a little later. Anyway, he cried out, help me, St. Anne, and I will become a monk. We were just in East Germany, and over there is a group of chaplains, Lutheran pastors, traveling to Germany. And suddenly there was a thunderclap and lightning and all of that. And one of the pastors, he just joking, said, help me, St. Anne, I will become a monk. His wife at his side said, oh, you don't.
All right. Do something from East Germany. Well, let's hear it. Have you got some fun trail stories?
We have one incident that is true. Madeline on our trip was usually dawdling a little bit. So this is a great big bus with big beautiful windows. And it included also a refrigerator so we could have beer or whatever we wanted on the trip. And then also small toilets. We got to Wittenberg, everybody just gorging the walk from the bus and started looking around at the sites there, especially the Castle Church. Madeline didn't show up. Couldn't figure out where she was. About an hour later, here she came. She says, you'll never know what, you ever guess what happened to me? He said, what? She said, I got locked in the junk. So somebody made up a moral, which is that if you go to the head, be careful, you don't get left behind.
I have one that didn't happen to me, but it did to my parents. And they took some friends of theirs to the neighbor's town to a funeral. They got in the church and looked at the mourners, and they didn't know what was going on. They'd gone to the wrong funeral. The lady with my parents was very, very hard of hearing. And they had a hard time getting her to know why they were getting out. What had happened was the deceased was a Methodist, so they went to the Methodist church. But somebody else had gotten a church for a funeral before this one happened, so they had gone over to another church. But my folks were embarrassed beyond tears to get up and walk out of a funeral.
Embarrassment stories I got lots of. I preached a funeral sermon once for nothing. And the guy I was mentioning all the time was not the one in the coffin, but one down in the church. And I got the names mixed up somehow. I forgot about that category of embarrassment. I can go even worse was the time when I actually, these are true. I mean, you know, I married a woman, to a man. Not the groom who was in front of me, but some guy who was a previous boyfriend of hers who was in the congregation. And the whole ceremony, I was using the wrong name. Oh, it wasn't Steve, it was Jim. So, write it down. Yes?
I have one under the mixed emotions category. At one point, years ago when my other son, now this one was about 12.
You sure it was the other one?
Yes, he's sitting in bed right now, so okay. I can tell this. We had trouble with our garbage disposal in the sink, and the sink was all stopped up, and so I had the plunger in there, and I'd been working on it, and for some reason I decided to stop a while. I went out of the room. I came back in about 15 minutes later, and the first thing I noticed were fingerprints in the grease on the ceiling of the kitchen ceiling, and the next thing I noticed was the plunger stuck into the ceiling. And at the bottom of the plunger, a sign that said, have you hugged your kid today? He has one about his first church that was held in a funeral parlor.
No. I think you've been introduced.
Oh. Yeah, it was a mortuary, and they had many years ago, they had an embalming machine which made an awfully lot of noise, in which I didn't really, I had asked them because people are sometimes a little squeamish about this. And sure enough, in the middle of one service, in the middle of the sermon, on comes this thing gurgling away and going through the whole shot. And I thought, oh boy, this kills the whole thing. And afterwards, the first lady out of the church comes out and says, "My pastor, the coffee maker was certainly lousy." I never said another word.
Yeah, Larry.
This is about a friend who at the time was at Yale, and this was back in the days when it was a male institution only. And his fraternity had invited the women students from Smith College down, and they had the banquet tables reserved at Maury's. We were sitting there with his date when he noticed that one of his fraternity brothers was trying to send a signal, and he finally caught the signal that his fly was open. So as subtly as he could, because a strange group, as subtly as he could, he zipped up his fly, and the banquet proceeded. And he got up to leave, and he backed away, and all of the silver and all of the courtesies. And I knew that this was a formal affair, so I memorized this "Freundlich sehr Sie kennen zu lernen." I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance. I went over that again and again and again. Well, the day came and I was introduced to Chancellor Kreisky, and I extended my hand and I said, Es tut mir leid, Sie kennenzulernen, which means I'm very sorry to make your acquaintance.
In the same category, we were married 5 years before we told anyone of the event, but on our honeymoon we were married in Illinois and traveled.
This is being recorded.
We traveled west until half of our money was gone, which got us to Colorado. And we stayed in Boulder, and we were there for more than an hour, and we just could not understand where the signs were that pointed to the dam. We were so embarrassed about it that we did not know our geography that well and what state Boulder Dam was that we assumed we were Boulder, Colorado. Why they moved the dam on us. But we can tell.
How long was it before you found out where it went to?
After about an hour. You have to wait.
Uber, you never could trust me.
Oh, yeah, you're going to open it up to that. My wife here, she works hard at when she meets people.
This is the lady on the
right. This nice lady, and I have her permission. She's heard me tell us all the time. But she asked somebody one time, you know, well, how do you get to remember somebody's name when you're introduced? And this person said, well, ask them to spell their name, and then you won't forget it. So the next time she ran into somebody, you know, that was on her mind so much, she, right away she says, and how do you spell that? He says, B-A-L-L.
your turn.
I've got a hold of one. I won't mention the person's name, but this person was giving announcements. There was not me. And it was time to...
It's not going
to
be a bear story.
No, it was time for departures and saying goodbye to the villagers. And the person said, now when I call your name, I want you to stand, and then we'll all send you home with a Holden clap.
This is one I heard here last year about Oli and Nina. Well, Nina said, okay, Oli, the outdoor bathroom is getting a little full, you need to go out and take care of it. So he goes out there and he gets his friend Frank and they put some dynamite in it and they're gonna blow it out. So, they get it all set up and they get the wire, you know, and they go behind this brick wall and they're just about ready to push it down and he's going, bam, like this. And Lena runs out of the kitchen and then into the outhouse and it was too late, he'd gone like this. And so it just goes kaboom! And there's stuff all over and everything. And then they go, oh no, we killed her, oh no. And she gets up and wipes off and stuff and she goes, oh! I'm so glad I didn't do that in the kitchen.
Right.
wife's having me with three old men.
Anything else in the balcony?
Well, the level is rising.
I heard a story the other day, it was kind of cute. The circus had come to town, and the strongman had did a lot of performances on the stage, and were very amazing to the crowd. So to end up his show, he took an orange, and he put it up in his hand, and he squeezed it, all the juice out of it. And so then he says, now he says, I'll give $100, he says, to anybody who can squeeze another drop of orange juice out of this orange. So a couple of guys got up there and they squeezed as hard as they could, no orange juice. And the second guy got up there and he squeezed as hard as he could, no orange juice. So an ordinary looking fellow came up and he grabbed hold of the orange and he held for a while and he squeezed real hard. Lo and behold, two drops of orange juice came out of that orange. So the circus strongman says, here's $200. But he says, I want you to tell me, he says, what you do for a living or what you do in order to be able to be that strong and squeeze two drops of orange juice out of the orange. Oh, he says, I'm the Lutheran church treasurer.
There was a pastor who was doing the children's sermon, the first part of the service. And he gets all the kids up there and gets them sat down and he says, what's brown and furry and saves nuts through the winter? These kids kind of look at each other and this one hand goes up. He says, I know the answer is supposed to be Jesus, but it sounds like a squirrel.
Chairs in New York.
family cleanses everything, erases it. That's a good topic, children. I remember when mine were little, I guess this is part of the parcel of being PKs or preacher's kids. They were playing outside the window, and I walked by the window, and little Jonathan had just come over to join the group, and I heard the one son say, "Well, guys, since you've got God on your side, we get Jonathan."
When our youngest was three, we were having chili for supper, and he wasn't too interested in it, and he was trying to make excuses for not eating it. And he held up a kidney bean, and like, you know, "What's this?" And I says, "Well, that's a bean." And he got very serious all of a sudden. He looked back at me, and he says, "A human bean?"
We had friends who lived with us for about 6 or 8 months while some work was being done in their house. And Kimberly, I think, was also probably three, maybe three and a half. And we always shared the evening meal together. And I asked her if she would say the grace. And she replied, "No, I don't have to. My food is already cool."
Since you've gone to the mealtime topic, a friend of mine said that they always they had the phone right by the table, and they were all ready to say the blessing when the telephone rang, and his dad picked up the phone and said, "Come, Lord Jesus."
For most embarrassing moment. I won't name names. I had a certain car where the big danger was, because of the configuration of the engine transmission layout, that you might drain the transmission instead of the engine oil. Or to do that, you had to have a special wrench and make several other blunders along the way. Anyway, I did that, but the thing that really tipped me off and got me suspicious was the fact that the darn thing ran better for a while. That's it.
I have a real funny story. You'll have to use your imagination a little bit. I was working at a Bible camp, and as one of the staff members, and we always had a big skit that we put on at the end of the camping season. Well, I and a girl had rigged up this skit. We had this huge pair of overalls, and we both got in it. And we had this big shirt, and we get ourselves dressed out there, and it was real hard to walk. Our knees were, you know, we couldn't coordinate. We had to kind of rock back and forth on the way out there. Well, the theme of our skit was Old MacDonald, and she was just tall enough so that I could set my head on her shoulder, and we'd sing Old MacDonald and coordinate, and she would be Mac, and I would be Donald. And we had done this for a couple of weeks, and then this one week, it was the big camp week. There were about 150 kids, you know, junior high kids. And we got out there, we were waddling out there, and we started singing this song. About in the middle of the song, we started losing our balance. And all of a sudden, we just went and just bounced on the stage. And we couldn't do anything but just lay there. And everybody was just laughing. And we were just laying there, and we couldn't do anything. And pretty soon, about four of the other staff guys saw our predicament and picked each of our legs, you know, and our arms, and drug us off. But it was, what was even more funny was, in the meantime, we had laughed so hard that when they picked us up to take us off, there was a little puddle.
Oh,
story. I started, it was my first day at that camp for the severely mentally retarded. I was a nurse, and they all came at once, 80 of them. You know, they all piled off the bus, and a lot of them were nonverbals, like, I can't tell. You know, we just couldn't tell who they were. They had no name tags. The only way we could identify them was by looking at their underwear. So.
So wait a minute.
Everything went great until we discovered one of the guys had the wrong underwear on. And they gave him this massive dose of phenobarbital and all this other stuff, and I just go, oh no. So I gave him this Epicac, which makes you throw up, and he was going like this. So we rushed him to the hospital, and all the way he's in this sweat and going, and I thought he was going to die, and it didn't even faze him, I found out later, because that was his manners, and all during the rest of the week.
Her story about people waddling reminded me of my brother-in-law. He owns that. Everything. He doesn't waddle. He owns a grocery store, and he spent his whole life in the grocery business. And he has some stories to tell about shoplifting. And the funniest one is that he worked in a poor neighborhood in a grocery store, and this big, huge woman came up to the check stand, and he checked out all the groceries, and she was walking out toward the door, and all of a sudden a turkey fell out from between her legs.
My middle child has been, from very young, quite interested in what's going to happen several years down the road. And about 3 years ago, we built a house, and first time that the bank and us have owned a house, or we're buying a house. Anyway, it was quite exciting for us, and apparently it was exciting for him too. And we're driving home about the second day that we lived there, and he kept asking me these questions. Dad, how are you going to be when I graduate from high school? I don't know, about 50, I suppose. How about college? I don't know, 55. Well, Dad, how old are you going to be when I get married? I said, I don't know, about 60. Finally, says Craig, I said, why are you asking all these questions? He says, Dad, he says, when you die, can I have this house? the same year then, about a week before my birthday, we were talking at supper about, I think there must have been a funeral that week, and we were talking about dying. And finally, he figured it out. He says, Dad, he says, for your birthday present, he says, if you die in your birthday, he says, I'll buy the coffin. that was after the, you know, we wanted the house, so we keep checking the cookies for dirty and all he's eight now.
Don't tell about your insurance. He reminded me of a story that I use frequently in communication to make sure that you're answering the question that you've been asked. 10, 11, 12-year-old boy came to his father rather animatedly one day, and, Father, where did I come from? And the father thought, well, the child's 12 years old. Yeah, maybe I ought to realize, okay. Half an hour, birds, bees, flowers, and mother and father. Finally turned to the child and said, well, have I answered your question? Said, well, not all of it, Dad. So a new kid down the street came, but he came from Detroit. I didn't know where I was.
Thank you.
you're not excluded if you're in the back. Help it out. It seems that a couple of American businessmen were traveling through very isolated rural areas of Africa several years ago. And they were addressing groups of people wherever they had the opportunity. They climbed up on this cart. The villagers gathered around them, and they were expounding about how great things were in America. He says, in the United States, everybody is equal. And at that, the villagers raised their arms and they yelled, Hazanga! Hazanga! And he said, in America, we have no such thing as divorce. Everybody gets along. Everything is just marvelous. Hazanga! Hazanga! And then this went on for several minutes until finally they said, we really got these people. This is great. And he says, and everybody works in America. There's no unemployment. Hazanga! Hazanga! So that finally their little speech is over to the villagers, and they walk over to the chief and they say, it's almost dark. We've got to get to the next village. Just can you show us the way? He says, yes. He says, it's just directly past, just over that pasture there. He says, and by the way, don't step in the Hazan.
Story about a Lutheran pastor who got a call late at night, and it was a woman just terribly distraught, and she had to see him immediately, and he said, no, I'm sorry, but I don't follow any counseling now. Can we wait till morning? She said, no, it absolutely can't. There's been a death in my family, and I just need help. So he said, okay, I'll meet you over at church. It took about 10 minutes in the car to get over there, and she was waiting at the door and got in, and he said, well, why don't you tell me what the problem is? And she said, oh, pastor, she said, I just don't know what to do. She said, my dog just died. And he said, your dog? And he said, you got me out of bed at 11 o'clock at night, and you can't deal with the grief of your dog. And he said, I don't know what to say to you. She said, I just need help, Pastor. She said, I'm wondering if you could have a burial service for him on Thursday. And he said, lady, he said, we're Lutherans. He said, there's nothing in LBW on burial dogs. He said, Lutherans don't bury dogs. And she just sobbed and cried, and she was distraught. She said, what will I do? I don't know what to do. All right, he said, the best thing I can think about, he says, just down the road here about a block is a little non-denominational church, and they might bury dogs. She said, well, pastor, she said, thank you. You really helped me a lot. And she's about to go, and the tears streaming down her face. By the way, she said, what do you suppose the honorarium should be for this pastor that would bury my dog? And he said, I don't have the slightest idea, lady. I'm just tired. I need to get home to bed. He said, what were you thinking of? And she said, well, I was thinking about $1,000. And he says, wait a minute. He said, how long did you say your dog was Lutheran?
Must have been the fellow in the boat fishing. This particular must have been the same Lutheran guy fishing with a doctor and a lawyer, and the boat struck a rock and began to take on more water than they could bail out. And the Lutheran clergyman felt that, after discussion, that he was probably the best swimmer of the three, and it was about a mile in shore. And he indeed would go in, and he would get help and save the doctor and the lawyer. He left and got about halfway there, and the doctor and lawyer watching realized there were sharks in the water swimming toward him. The doctor, not knowing what to do, said, I'm going to bow my head and pray. And the lawyer, well, I'll watch and see what happens. Well, the clergyman made it all right. The lawyer turned to the doctor, you can put your head up now. Everything, the guy is safe. We have no trouble. And the doctor said, well, there is proof, positive proof of the power of prayer. No, just professional courtesy.
Well, Ole Sven and Lars were just coming back from the old country. They weren't too much on city life, so they lived out in the woods and made their living off the land. And they'd go out and chop firewood. And while they were chopping and hauling his wood, all of a sudden Ole just rolled over and died. And poor Lars was just going crazy. He said, Sven, what do we do? I've never buried anyone before, and Sven said, well, I saw it done once. I think I can handle it. So they spent the rest of the day digging this really deep, deep hole, about 20 feet across. So they got it all done, laid Ole out in front of, just on the edge of the hole there. They bowed their heads and started praying. And Sven said a couple words that he thought sounded kind of biblical. And he said, now we'll try to bury him in the name of the Father and the Son. And he kicks him in the Holy Ghost.
Bill, so he thought he'd go down there and get rid of it. And he went up to this guy down there and he said, I'd like to have some change for this. And the guy said, well, he says, what do you want? 2 9s or 3 6s?
I don't know how the religions will mix, but maybe I'll just mention one that has been current in the Roman Catholic circles. There is a vision that was reported that Pope John Paul recently was deep in prayer and that he had this vision of Jesus, and Jesus suggested to him that if there were any pressing questions on his mind that he should feel free to ask and that he'd respond to them. And so delighted at the chance, he thought that there were some of the issues that were beginning to burn a little bit in the church. And he said, well, you know, in my time as Pope, will priests get married, you know, this celibacy issue and so forth? And Jesus reassured him and he said, well, no, not in your time. And then he said, what about ordaining women as priests? In my time, will women be ordained as priests? And Jesus said, no, not in your time. And so then there was one final question. He said, and he said, what about another Polish pope? Will there be another Polish pope? Jesus said, no, not in my time, there won't. The appreciation crosses the boundaries.
But not regarding the Swedes or the Norwegians. This is a story from Minnesota. There was a Swede who had a Norwegian as a neighbor, and the Norwegian was the game warden. The Swede would go out every morning very early and fish, and would always bring home a whole tub full of fish. And the Norwegian knew that he wasn't smart enough to do that, so he was sure that there was something that wasn't, well, was maybe fishy about it. So he would try to catch him, but the Swede was very evasive. So one day he said, I will use psychology, Swedes are not too smart. And so he says, I don't believe that you catch all those fish.
I want to see it with my own eyes. And so will you take me? And so they arranged for the time, and so they went out fishing. And lo and behold, the sea pulled up to a place that the Norwegian game warden knew was absolutely barren. Never had a fish been caught there. But the sea, perfectly undaunted, reached under the bench of his boat, and he pulled out his tackle box and opened it, and then pulled out a stick of dynamite, and out of his pocket he pulled out a box of matches, and he struck one match and he lit the dynamite, and then he held it a few moments and he threw it in the water, and there was one hell of a splash. And all over came to the surface fish. And so he went and he scooped them up into his tub, and he had a full tub. The Norwegian game warden looked at him at first aghast, unable to say anything. Then he finally said, "You know, you have done a terrible thing. I can throw the whole book of the law at you. You know, I can put you in jail. What are you going to say for yourself?" And the Swede didn't say a word. But he reached under the bench of the boat that he was sitting on, and he opened his tackle box, and he took out a stick of dynamite, and then he reached in his pocket, and he took out a match, and he struck the match, and he lit the dynamite, and then he held it for a few minutes, and then he gave it to the Norwegian game warden, and he looked at him, and he says, "You're going to sit there, or you're going to fish?"
Before they came into town, that they would feed these people only tab and apples for their meals so that they could keep their weight down. And as time went on, these people, the choir became known as the Moron Tab and Apple Choir.
Who would like to wrap it up with Green Challenge?
That choir thing reminded me of when I was in on concert band tour in Germany with my college band a few years ago, and we were in Germany in a small town, just a little village, and we played a concert in this really tiny old Gothic church. And we were kept by an older couple that didn't speak any English, and we didn't speak any German. This was over Mother's Day weekend. And they invited their daughter and son-in-law from Frankfurt to come up, because they could speak English, and come up to spend the weekend and enjoy the concert and so on. And they had a very simple home, old-fashioned. It was a stereotype of your German winemaker and his wife, happy housewife, big cook stove. She cooked on a cook stove. We had mounds and mounds of food. And he'd been a furniture maker, so they let us sleep. My roommate and I slept in the master bedroom. And he built all the furniture himself. And it was a big bed with stuffed with straw or grass or something, really hard mattress, and a big down comforter. Two single beds put together, but it was quite a big size bed. But they were separated, but two separate parts. So I got one and my roommate got the other, and we had stayed up really late talking this night and just having a good time, so we had to go to bed. And then Rick and I stayed up and talked even later. It must have been like 2 o'clock in the morning. We decided to go to bed, and so we turned out the light, and an enormous crash. And I about had a heart attack. The bed fell apart, and Rick's side of the bed fell down from his head down, and his feet were elevated in the air. Oh no, what are we going to do now? You know, it obviously had woken up the whole house. I don't know how anyone could have stayed asleep through that. But what were we going to do? Make more noise and turn on the lights and try to put the bed back together or what? But we had to do something because his feet were in the air and blood was going to his head. And so, we got up and put the bed back together. Not a word was spoken in the morning. We just wondered what. Not a word.
Oh, but what we're thinking.
That's why it's my most embarrassing.